Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Is It Just Me? It's the podcast where we dissect all sorts of nonsense and treat it with all the seriousness and the gravitas that it deserves. I mean, James Williams, my co-host, has even got us talking about Bin Night this week. This is important stuff, high-level stuff, everybody. I'm Jo Elvin, and James and I will be joined today by Carrie Hope Fletcher, one of the famous Fletcher family, Tom Fletcher from McFly's sister. She's an actress, a singer, she's a writer. She's got a new book out on the 17th of September called Into the Spotlight, which is her first novel for children. We talked about all sorts of stuff with her, from escape rooms to being a goody two-shoes on a plane and garbage night. Get excited, everybody. Here we go. Carrie Hope Fletcher, we're so happy to see you.
And see you.
I mean, the listeners are listening, but we can see you right now in this new Zoom world. But everybody's heard of a triple threat, but you are a singer, dancer, actress, writer, YouTuber. You're like a quintuple threat.
I love how you added dancer into that. Have you ever seen me dance?
I saw Heather's. I'm pretty sure I did see you dance.
Yeah, there was a lot of drunken 17-year-olds dancing in that, so I could kind of get away with it in that. I'm not the strongest dancer. I can move.
You did that beautifully.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
So how do you define yourself if in any way?
I always say actress and author and then kind of tag vlogger onto that, because I feel like vlogging sort of runs alongside both of those things. I feel like vlogging is something that I do in the downtime, and to showcase being an actress and an author. I feel like if I wasn't an actress and an author, I'd have nothing to talk about on YouTube.
Oh, and I bet that's not true, but it's just like I don't know how old you are, but you're still such a baby, and you've got this sort of, I don't know, like Judi Dench level of, it's just you've been acting since you were tiny.
Yes. Yeah. It's been a long time. I had my first acting role when I was 7 years old. So I've, been on the stage for a long time, but it's where I just love it so much. That's the thing. Like, I get asked a lot, like, how do you find the time to do all these things? And isn't it difficult? But everything that I do is kind of self-inflicted. I do it because I've chosen to do it. And, you know, I'm very lucky to have lots of things on the go that I really enjoy doing. So it never feels like too much of a struggle. You know, it is hard work at times, but it never feels like a chore, I guess. Because yeah. I love doing it all so much.
It's so amazing. And when you're writing, because you've got another fiction out. It's it's called Into the Spotlight, and it's your first children's book.
Yes, yeah.
And how do you carve out the time to do that? Is it something you enjoy, or do you feel a bit sort of, you know, with a gun to your head with deadlines?
Sometimes the deadlines do get a little bit too close for comfort. But I usually write to and from the theatre on the train, because I get the tube in, and so that, you know, it's a good 45 minutes there and 45 minutes back on one tube line. So it's a nice chunk of time that I I prefer to be writing and doing something productive rather than sitting and playing a game, which I usually do get sucked into if I'm not writing. I suddenly kind of go, oh my God, an hour's gone by and all I've achieved is three more levels on this random game that I downloaded on a whim.
Oh, so, but it is a thrill though, isn't it? It is. My husband like really rolls his eyes at me. It's what I do when I'm trying to relax is like, you know, they're sort of like matching games and I keep getting ads for them pop up on my phone. And Ross said to me, you know that I read an article that says it's only people classed as super users who get those ads. So I just felt so ashamed.
As long as you get a thrill out of it, it's fine.
No, but you're making me realize how much of my life I'm wasting.
Oh, no, stop.
Carrie, I asked you, so do you write on a laptop on the tube? Are you one of those people? I'm always so impressed with the people that can be asked to get a laptop out on tubes.
Yeah, no, I am one of those people, unfortunately. I used to roll my eyes at those people being like, oh, why aren't you just playing a game on your phone or like reading or something instead of like hauling around this massive laptop.
And are you a really loud tapper? I draw the line at the loud tapping, like clack, 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 clack. That I hate.
I hope not. I usually have my headphones on and I'm listening to some like random instrumental, so I can't hear my own tapping. So maybe I am, I don't know.
But you are, you're writing, aside from the acting, just one of your, you know, multi-hyphenates, Carrie, you're writing, you're a prolific writer. I mean, this is now, so in total, how many books have you now actually have published? Is it going to be on?
I think this is my seventh.
It might be the tenth. Yeah.
You weren't so lovely, Carrie. We'd hate you. You're far too overachieving. Yeah.
Oh, thank you. I think there's a compliment there somewhere. Thanks.
But do you ever just have a day of going, right, I'm doing absolutely diddly squat today?
Yeah, 100%. Okay. Yeah, every now and again.
She's lying.
No, honestly, I think I'd melt down far more often than I do already if I didn't have days when I'm just like, right, today it's just me and Disney Plus.
Also, Carrie, it's in your genes, isn't it? I mean, come on.
Yeah.
You're from a family of hugely creative, successful people. I mean, you know, is it just DNA or is it, it's a lot of hard work as well, I should imagine.
Oh gosh, yeah, absolutely. I feel like when people look at me and my brother, everyone thinks that we come from like a long line of people who do the same things. My dad worked in a Kodak factory in silver recovery driving a forklift and my mum was a learning support teacher for kids with special needs.
For a second, I thought you said your dad worked in a Kodak factory. That's probably a reference beyond many of our younger listeners, but that gave me a very exciting visual image.
No, Kodak, definitely Kodak. My parents are both, I mean, they're both very musical. Like my mum is a massive musical theatre fan, which is where me and my brother get our love of musical theatre from. And my dad plays guitar. He used to be in a band that used to play around like pubs and clubs and local YMCAs. But it kind of never went any further than that for dad. Until my brother asked him to play at Wembley Stadium with him, which was pretty cool.
Wembley Arena.
We're just very lucky to have such supportive parents who kind of instilled in us from such a young age that we really can do anything we want to do as long as we're willing to put in the hard work. And, you know, if it requires time or money and effort, there's always ways to obtain those things. We just need to be willing to think about it and, you know, find the ways to obtain those things.
Also, isn't it lovely though how times have changed a lot? Because I remember in my career, there was often a snobbery about people that had different strings to their bow, that awful expression of jack of all trades, master of none. And I love the fact that actually in the last sort of 10, 15 years, that snobbery has totally been blown out of the water. Yeah. And you know, people can now embrace and be totally successful in often very disparate fields. It doesn't necessarily have to be complimentary, but I mean, you know, it's great that, you know, you can just turn your hand to anything really now.
Yeah, definitely. Well, the thing I love about that saying is that everyone always misses off the last line because it's jack of all trades, master of none, but always better than a master of one.
I didn't know that.
I did not know that either.
Yeah, so the end of the phrase actually kind of is in favour of people who do actually have lots of strings to their bow.
Well, my mind's just been blown.
Every day is a school day. Yeah.
It is, yeah, it is wonderful because there's pros and cons to this wonderful culture that we've got now of people who do lots of different things. But there is also sort of the negative side of it where we kind of do glorify people burning out and working themselves to the point where they've got no more left to give. But I think we're kind of pulling it back now, and we're finding a good balance between being productive, but also taking care of yourself. You know, there's lots of conversations about mental health now and self-care and self-love and taking care of yourself as a priority, which I think is, you know, only a good thing.
But how do you save yourself from burnout? Because, you know, looking at your list of achievements makes me feel like burning out just reading it. I mean, it's just, it's extraordinary. How do you find the balance? Yeah,
I do struggle to find the balance. And up until about last year, I kind of was burning out on like a monthly basis, where I was just having just massive meltdowns where I was like, okay, I've got to the point where I've said yes to too many things, and now I don't know what to do because I just can't actually handle as many things as I've said yes to. So last year I actually started going to counselling, which massively helped. I finished that in lockdown actually this year. And I just cannot recommend it enough. I feel like there's a lot of people who think there's a lot of shame in asking for help. And it's a weakness, but I actually think it's one of the strongest things that you can do to admit that you aren't capable of doing everything on your own. And you do need to reach out and say, actually, I need support, and I need someone, even if it's just someone to guide me in the right direction and tell me how I'm meant to deal with this in the future, which is definitely something.
Yeah. I think it's brilliant because you've got so many followers and fans. So it's really powerful for someone like you to say that, because it's true. We all need help. We all, and I've had counseling for stress management and things. And it's like, it becomes that thing, doesn't it, where you have to learn how to say no, because it's terrifying to say no, especially when you are a hyphenate person and you're thinking, well, maybe this is the last thing I'll get offered, so I'm just going to say yes, 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 yes. And that's, it's addictive.
I'm such a people pleaser as well. I hate disappointing anyone. So if someone asks me a favor or asks me to do something, I'm always like, yes, absolutely, of course I'll do that.
Heard it here. We guilted her into the podcast. We did it.
But I just hate seeing like the look on someone's face when you say, no, actually, I can't do that. And them sort of going, oh, I'm going to have to find someone else, or I'm going to have to do some, you know, I hate that. So I'm always like, yes, I'll do it. And I will just find a way to figure it out. I will make it happen.
Sorry, that's my dog getting far too excited. Excuse me.
Right. Is there someone at the door?
I've got a cat who's got the loudest meow on the planet. So,
oh, excellent.
Bring him over to be quiet. So, say hello nicely. So Carrie's going to say, obviously, your first kids was how did writing for a different audience, like for obviously for a much younger audience, how did you make that switch in your head? Is it very different, the whole process?
It's not massively different, but I felt like I enjoyed it more. I feel like with kids, when you're writing for children, because magic is always such a big part of even my women's fiction book, I always find a way to add some kind of magical element into the books. And I feel like kids are just way more open to that. You don't have to explain magic to children. They just go, oh, it's magic. I'm totally on board. Yeah. I get it. Whereas adults, they're like, they've got like logic and reason in their heads going, well, how's that possible? Because that would never happen in the real world. And you're like, no, it's magic. You don't need to put reason.
Shut up.
So I feel like the kids are having a lot more fun just going, oh, I don't actually need to over explain that. Because as soon as you say that it's magic, they get it. They understand it. But I loved also writing about children in theatre, because I've been acting from such a young age, and I remember what it was like to be a child and be so in awe of these massive theatres and these huge auditoriums and all of the eccentric people that work backstage in wigs and costume and all of the actors and the crew. I have such fond memories from being a child in theatre. So then put that into a book was just so much fun.
Oh. So basic premise of the book, Carrie, what here's your elevator pitch. What can we expect?
Oh, goodness. Okay. It's about three children called Marigold, Mabel, and Morris, and they all find their way to the Pebble Theatre, which is owned by a very eccentric woman called Great Aunt Maud, but she refuses to be called Great Aunt Maud because she's more than great, she's brilliant. So she is Brilliant Aunt Maud. And Marigold wants to be a writer, Mabel wants to send people into space, she wants to work for NASA one day, and Morris wants to be a dancer. And their theatre is in jeopardy of going under. No one's buying tickets anymore. The cast of the theatre are all sort of as old and rickety as the theatre itself. And they need to find a way to save this theatre. And so Marigold decides to write a play, and they're all going to put this show on and hope that it saves the theatre. But of course, it is a reimagining of Ballet Shoes. by Noel Stretfield, who would have been 125 this year, which I think is pretty cool. And Marigold finds the journal of the three original fossil sisters, who are the three sisters in ballet shoes. And it's all about the three children now connecting with the three children then and discovering their dreams through the fossil sisters.
And I can almost see the film happening right before the lights.
Fingers crossed, one day.
Yeah, you will, yeah.
Also, Carrie, we can also add, like, I don't know, like a fortune telling to your list of talents. Because weirdly, I mean, now, obviously, it's a really scary time, isn't it? In the theatres, what's going on. I mean, where do you think? There are glimmers of hope, aren't there? You know, I bought tickets for performances of Talking Heads next month. You know, it does feel there's baby steps happening. Are you hopeful we're going to get to back to where we were in terms of the theatre?
I really hope so. I mean, it might take time, but like you said, baby steps. There's lots of things that are starting to happen, and there's lots of outdoor performances that have been happening, like Hair at the Turbine Theatre. They've done it outside in Battersea Park, which is amazing. So there's little things sort of like bubbling up here and there and everywhere. And of course, there's lots of plans for the future, like Cinderella, which should be opening next March, all the fingers crossed. And Frozen as well. My boyfriend's going to be in Frozen, which should also be opening around the same time, fingers crossed. So there's lots of things resurfacing after months and months of theatres just being completely dark. So
why don't we all just wear bloody hazmat suits to the theatre?
I mean, this is what I've been saying.
I'm not even joking. I just think it's, you know, you wouldn't have to worry about what to wear. You know, you wouldn't be able to hear anyone who was talking. All of that stuff would go away. And, you know, you'd check the cast, make sure they're all safe and well. And then you don't have to worry about the audience.
But it's a mathematic problem. It's a huge, because I haven't thought about it. So I spoke to my friend who works, he's a theatre producer. And he just said, aside from anything else, it's just trying to make it commercially viable. Because that's the problem. Unlike the cinema, where all the money, you know, when the cinemas are there, obviously every production has different costs, different size cars, different production. And unfortunately, you know, we've become a bit spoiled, haven't we, in terms of the West End is so brilliant, delivered such high octane production levels that, you know, it's really hard when you've only then got half the capacity of the audience. But even if you, because I always say, well, people are spending more money on beer to make the pubs reopen. And I do wonder if, I mean, you know, I know theatres can be expensive anyway, but I think there's a market. I think people, when we can, I think people are going to be in their droves going. I really do. Because I think people
definitely.
I think so too. I mean, if you just look on Twitter, like the amount of outrage that there has been that theatres haven't reopened when you're watching snooker games being played in the Sheffield Crucible with a full audience. Like, that's a theatre and you're playing a snooker game in a full theatre. It's like, why can't we just substitute the snooker for the cast and do a show? Like, what's the difference? So I feel like there are lots of people who are so outraged. You just need to look on Twitter and see everyone in their thousands sort of, you know, arguing the case for theatres coming back.
People are angry on Twitter. Wow.
I know. What a surprise. People have got opinions on Twitter. Oh.
Yeah.
And let's be honest, I mean, Christmas is different Christmas without a panto. They've got to find a way around that. I mean, you know.
I know. What's Christmas without a panto, eh?
Oh, God. Well, speaking of outrage, Carrie, you know you've signed up for having by joining this podcast, because we do now need to move on and debate some very silly topics in a very serious way. So I know you're ready for
this. Absolutely. Yes, I'm well up for this. As soon as I read them, I got outraged. So.
Okay, let's do it. Is it just me that has a love-hate relationship with Ben Knight? Now, I don't know why, in my head, it's a bit like, you know, like when you were at school and Sunday would roll around and there were just certain things associated with Sunday that made you get really depressed because you'd get up to school the next morning. Like, for me, the theme tune to the Antiques Roadshow was always like a sign of, oh my God, it's school tomorrow, how awful. And then in a similar vein, you know, like Songs of Praise, I mean, you know, religion aside, just that theme tune would make me go, oh no, I've got to get to school in the morning.
Yeah.
Anyway, so for me, like bin night for me is a Sunday here. So every time I get around to it, I'm like, oh, I've got to do the bins. And that means, oh no, it's another start of working week. And then also there's the physical act of, it's not a very pleasant job anyway.
No.
But like every weird, horrible job, when you've done it, the sense of satisfaction when you have done it. Mm-hmm. And it's all about the little wins in life. Where are you on this one, Carrie? Do you put as much thought into your bin nights as I do?
I forget it nearly every week. And the amount of bin bags that are in my garage currently is horrendous. Like, we can't go in the garage now because it just smells like bins, because we forget at least twice a month. So we end up with double the amount of bin bags and recycling in our garage. And I honestly, the feeling on a Monday morning when you see everyone's bin bags out, or you hear the bin van coming along the bin lorry, and you're like, oh my God, we've forgotten. And it's that I once chased the bin lorry down the road with my bin bags, being like, no, take them, please take them.
So your bin night is Sunday night too then? Yeah,
yeah, ours is Sunday as well, yeah.
So Jojo, she was saying, for me, bin night is a Sunday night. So for me, it's almost like that clangor of doom when I'm like, oh no, it's Sunday night. It's the start of another working week, you know. And I also said, weirdly, I find like, it's a bit like any kind of mundane act. Once you've done it, you feel a real sense of pride. It's a bit like one of those really easy things to add to a to-do list to make you feel good about yourself. Put the bins out. But where are you on this argument, Joe? What day of the week have you been?
Well, first of all, because my Wi-Fi crashed, so can you hear me all right?
Yes, we can hear you.
Well, I mean, my husband listens to this podcast, so I'm not going to be able to tell any lies about the fact that I've got a very, very, I would say, tenuous relationship with bin night. Tuesday is our bin day, so on Monday evenings, I know when Ross is home, because I hear the rumbling of the bins go out just as he walks in the door. So I'm like, oh, brilliant. He's done that again. That's brilliant. So it's just like when you, I know Theresa May, I remember once got in loads of stick for going on the One Show and calling the bin, taking out the bins, the boys' job. But I'm, you know, that's where I'll happily leave my feminism to one side and say that is totally the boys' job. And I love that. I love that it is. And
it's so funny hearing you say about like rolling the bins out. Where I live, we don't have wheelie bins. So it makes putting the bins out even worse.
Oh.
So we don't have a big wheelie bin that we can just like take them out sporadically through.
We've got several bins. I've got a food bin I have to deal with. I've got, I often take out the little slimy bag of gross food from that one and stick it in the little grey one out the front. We've got a garden one, we've got a recycling bin, we've got it's just never ending, the bin chat about, you know, sort of like which bin can this go in, that one can, no it can't go in that one. And yeah, but that's Ross's job. I take the hairs out of the shower drain so he can do the bins.
Nice.
And that's fair, right?
That is completely fair.
Yeah,
completely fair.
I have no choice. It's only me in this house. My Bingley the dog's not going to help put anything out, let alone the bins. But it is a weird thing, because I go through a phase of it. It's such a quick turnaround. I go through a phase of going, oh God, it's bin night. I hate this job. And then the second I've done it, I feel like the best person, like I'm winning at life.
Yeah.
When lockdown first happened, I remember the first time I heard those garbage trucks, I really did feel like everything was going to be okay, because I thought, are they going to stop the garbage trucks? What's going to happen? Is it going to be like the plague times when all the rubbish just piles up outside? So it's like, it's a real mark that you live in civilization. It's wonderful that we have the bin lorries. It's wonderful.
Definitely.
And also weirdly, as much as it's gross, I kind of love my food bin. I remember when a food bin came into my life, and it literally is, I mean, in terms of the waste, and I quite like that sort of like segregation now of having, you know, separate things, and I feel like I'm doing my little bit to save the planet. But yeah, it is a gross thing, Joe. And also, I don't know about you, but I always try to shove too much into the food bin, because basically you need to accept at some point you've got to just move it. And because I hate
I'm the one who accepts it needs emptying. It's the other two who like fill it to the point where, you know, are you ever like just so terrified to even open it and try to do it really quickly?
Well, I don't know about you. I'm that person that then spends, I fill it and I should have just emptied it 3 days earlier. No, I rather wait till the very end. Then I spend about half an hour trying to tie the tiniest knot in the top of the bag, stretching it as much as I can just to try and get the bag to close.
And then trying to prize it out of its container.
And then and then that time when you really have filled it too much and it splits at the bottom.
Oh,
yeah. Inevitably, I put tea bags and coffee, which is never a good thing. You know, there's combustible bags. I've got no kind of actual, you know. But yeah, it's a funny thing. But I do think weirdly, it's almost like it's a cleansing thing, isn't it? Mm. I think that's what it is, because I do feel, I mean, because I would agree, I feel terrible, Carrie, if I've had, say, like a double hangover. Say, like, I've had that thing where I've gone out on a Saturday and I thought it's a good idea to have a hair of the dog on the Sunday, and then I end up getting drunk again on Sunday night, and then I wake up late or I've forgotten to put the bins up on Sunday. I literally, the hangover on Monday is so much worse if I've ignored the bin.
Yeah. So, agreed. Do you both still get weekly bin collections?
Yeah.
Wow. Oh. That is luxury. have you know, you 1%ers, have a thought for the rest of us, slobbing it with a fortnightly collection.
But poor Carrie hasn't got wheels on hers, though.
I know. I don't even have wheelie bins.
You have to physically pick up those bins and carry them out.
I think we should do a telethon.
Yeah.
It is a bit unfair though. You think there should be like a universal, like, because that's what I find whenever you get guests come to stay and they come and there's a totally different setup for bins, recycling, and they're all different colours. And it is a bit weird there's not just a universal, like, approach to it. But hey, that's a whole other podcast.
It's a real first world problem.
Well, I'm glad it's not just me that has to get tension. Well, Joe hasn't got any tension about bin night because it's Ross's job.
It's like, you know, what's bin night?
Carrie, I'm glad it's not just me. And obviously, if you're listening to us wondering what the hell are you talking about, we do love hearing your thoughts on the show. So please do email us. The usual address is isitjustmepodcast@gmail.com. Yes, let us know your thoughts on the show and any suggestions for future topics.
So I want to ask you both, is it just me who hates social activities like murder mysteries and escape rooms and dining in the dark, which I've actually done? I have dined in the dark and I was very apprehensive. I was bought it as a Christmas present by my brother.
Was nudity involved?
There was no nudity involved, thank God, no nudity. Although I wouldn't have known.
That you know of, yeah. Yeah,
I wouldn't have known. It was pitch black in there. It was amazing, but it was very, very strange. They really encourage, like, I loved it, apart from the fact that they encourage you to talk to the people that you're sat with.
Oh.
And that I was not on board with.
I just think it sounds like, I'd be genuinely concerned that I might get murdered or something.
I mean, that, yeah. Well, I'm not going again now that that's a concern. I've not even thought of that.
Carrie, isn't the idea that apparently the idea is you dine in the dark, so it enhances your other senses. So apparently your sense of smell and taste. Did that work for you?
I don't think so, no.
Well, but somebody can just serve a whole other meat and two veg on your plate and you would just never know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Because you don't know what you're eating as well. So you pick like a meat, fish, vegetarian option and then they just serve you whatever. And I guess it's sort of like a guessing game. You have to try and guess. They tell you afterwards what you had. But I had no idea.
I love the idea of those chefs who've obviously, in any other restaurant, they've got to do a load of chefy things and make it a gorgeous plate of food. When they do it in the dark, they're going to slop it on that plate.
I know. Sounds like one big con.
Well, I mean, without getting totally sidetracked down the food, you're more talking, Carrie, aren't we, about the kind of social sort of gimmick?
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I'm with you a bit. Like, I love seeing, I'm a sociable person. I like seeing my friends. I like going out for dinner. I like going to the theatre, the cinema. But I do worry sometimes that some of my friends are just searching for a gimmick because we have to have a gimmick. It can't just be a dinner. And I'm a bit like you. I'm not what they call a joiner inner when it comes to these kind of things. It makes me very tense. The second
is it that your friends are just looking for any way to not have to make conversation with you, so they come up with all these other things?
Because all I do is talk about bin night. That's probably a lot.
Just
to
feels
do
like
with
stress.
Her.
It just feels like a lot of stress. Like I, if I'm seeing my friends, I just want to go and sit and talk to my friends instead of being like, let's figure out 27 clues that unlock this door. Otherwise, we're all trapped in here for the next 3 hours. No, I just want to sit and have a chat with you guys.
And also with escape rooms, I can imagine all my friends getting super annoyed when they didn't realize before how goddamn stupid I am. And that, you know, so like, why are we friends with her? She's useless.
I feel like escape rooms are just designed. They're designed to bring out the worst in everyone.
Yeah.
I feel like that level of stress and pressure, I'm only going to get angry and upset.
Yeah. Do you know what? What do you think about this though? Once I agreed once and I hated it, but it gave me a lot of fun things to talk about later.
but I got invited to an immersive theatre experience. Have you ever done that?
Yeah, I have. And they,
well, I mean, see, it's not fair because you're an actress.
So that's my worst nightmare. It's my worst nightmare.
But I was at the Corinthia Hotel and I had to go from the kitchen to this actor who was playing a manager. And it was my first night waitressing, which already gives me the most horrific flashbacks from my time as an actual waitress. And then, so they sent me up to this table with this couple who were acting a fight. And I said, and I had to say, can I take your order? And the woman looked at me and said, yes, could you bring me a man with decent sized balls for a change instead of this cat? And I mean, I didn't know what I was supposed to say. And you just feel like such a lemon because you don't know how to actually respond to that. And that went on for hours.
Nah, I'm out. I would have walked out that one.
Yeah,
I couldn't.
I'm actually getting really sweaty hands just hearing that story. That's like my worst nightmare. I mean, I'm the person that's actually like, you know, I've refused front row tickets. And this is no disrespect carried to your industry at all. I mean, I love it. I get it.
I totally get it.
My thing is, if I can see breath or spittle on the actor, I'm too close. Okay, because I like the idea of anonymity. I like being in the dark, watching you guys doing your thing. Any sense of me being part or immersed in the performance, I mean, like I said, I'm getting clammy hands just thinking about it. So, I mean, I've been given front row tickets to gigs before, and I've actually gone five rows back and asked the people to swap, and they've looked
at me. Yeah, I got pulled up in a play once to dance. It was horrendous.
Joe, what's going on?
Absolutely horrendous. And there wasn't even any... there wasn't any discussion or any, we'd love a member of the audience. It was just, it was a theatre that was like, the stage was floor level. And this guy just bloody pulled me up out of my seat. The next thing, I was doing a fucking foxtrot with this guy.
No, I hate it. There's a reason that I work in theatre that isn't improv. There's a reason I have and a score and set
lines.
Well,
I've been doing it for years.
I can't. It makes me stressed and sweaty.
I mean, my absolute limit, I think, when it comes to anything like that is a pub quiz. I love a pub quiz. That's perfectly fine. But anything more, you know, outlandish than that, I'm like, no.
Even karaoke, I can't get on board with. I can't do karaoke. And everyone's like, but it's
your clearly
job.
Don't
You're
drink
a
enough.
Singer. No, I know this is the thing. I think I need to get far more drunk than I have been. But everyone's always like, you're a singer. This is what you do. And I'm like, no, but you need to understand. If I go up and sing well...
That screws up everyone else.
That's not the point of karaoke. But then if I go up there and sing badly, because I'm a singer, everyone's going to be sat there going like, oh, I thought she was supposed to be a singer. I thought she worked for West End. So instantly I'm like screwed either way.
I hate it when good singers get up at karaoke.
It ruins it.
I hope you won't kill me for telling this story. But what is that game that's not karaoke? But it's called SingStar. But it's a game, right? It's not actually a singing or a test of your singing ability, because you have to follow there's like a grid you have to follow the voice, right? So it's actually a tactical game. Anyway, it was a Christmas party, and my friend Luke Evans, actor, super brilliant, brilliant singer, came along, all of us drunk. He took on my uncle, who can't sing for shit, but understood the rules of the game.
Brilliant.
And beat Luke. And Luke was just like mortified. I was like, Luke, it's not karaoke. Don't worry. It's not testing your voice. He was like, I just don't know how that happened. I'm just going
to...
It's
devastating.
SingStar as well, because I've got a SingStar. And I know I can't sing. But until SingStar, I didn't realize just how goddamn awful a singer is. You know what I mean? It's like, it's the first time. I was like, is that what you all hear when I sing? And they're like, oh, yeah.
I could get I could do karaoke, because I also operate on the assumption, unlike things like a lot of the things we've talked about, where, you know, the pressure's on, you've got to deliver, you've got to win. Pretty much everyone's bad at karaoke, right? The bar is set very low, and if you're drunk and you don't really care. I think the problem with a lot of these things is that it almost takes you back to school, where suddenly the pressure's on, it's like an exam or it's like a test of something.
Yeah.
And I think that's where all our neuroses come to the foreground, don't they? Where we're going to suddenly...
And you normally have to pay a fortune to do whatever it is.
You're paying 50 quid for the fortune of singing terribly in front of others, yeah.
Yeah, I can humiliate myself at home. I don't need to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I guess one really great thing about the pandemic is that no one's going to be locked in a mystery room for any time soon.
That's true.
We've got COVID to thank.
Yeah, that's true. Well, but also it's one of those things, I mean, you know, because I did have, during lockdown, I had those moments of going, when this is all over and we're allowed out again, I'm going to really get out there and embrace things. I remember thinking my friends would do all these activities. I was like, yeah, I'm even going to get involved in like those, like, you know, those activities. And yeah, no, that's lasted about. Yeah. No. I'm already like, no, thanks. I'll meet you for a drink afterwards.
Yeah. And you can bore the pants off me telling me all about your escape room antics.
Exactly. So if you are sat there going, we are a bunch of miseries, and you want to tell us as much, do email us, like I said, at the usual email address. It's isitjustmepodcast@gmail.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
So, Carrie Hope Fletcher, James Williams, is it just me who always, always pays full attention to the airplane safety demonstration? I thought of this because I was lucky enough to escape these strange times and have a holiday to Greece a couple of weeks ago.
Lovely.
And it was a really, I really, really felt for the EasyJet crew. I always feel for the crew on planes because I just think it must be such a miserable job. I see so many people misbehaving and being really antisocial in a way that they wouldn't be in normal circumstances. So I really felt like, you know, the 10th time that the cabin crew said, could we remind you all that you are supposed to be wearing your mask? So I think they must just want to get on and say, will you put that fucking mask on? Like I've asked you 10 times already. So how hard is it? Put the mask on. And I always just feel so embarrassed when they're standing up there giving it, here's the exits, here's what you do with the light on the life jacket, here's how you pull the mask down. We've all seen it 1,000 times before, but it's just, it feels so rude. It's almost like, to me, it's as bad as going to a play and sitting there with a newspaper on your lap and just flicking through it loudly. Just feel like, and you know, on a serious note, it is important to count how many seats there are between you and the exit. You never know, you never know. So, am I just a weirdo and, you know, you guys ignore the safety demo?
No, you're not. I watch it avidly every
And it's so
time.
Boring and mildly terrifying, but, you know.
Well, I'm just like a textbook overthinker. So by the time I'm in my seat, I've thought about every single way this plane's going to go down.
Same.
So yeah. I need to know how I'm going to save myself and my family in each scenario that this plane is going to down. So not only do I watch it, but if someone tries to speak to me, like my family, my boyfriend, my nephews, I'll be like, do you want to listen?
Because
do you want to pay attention? Because I don't want to die. Thanks. Okay, bye.
Exactly. Oh, I love what a head girl you are. You are on time.
Oh, I am. Yeah, no, like, yeah. I am goody two shoes to the bone.
I was going to say we're all a bunch of goody two shoes. I am the same. So I think again. It's weird. I've sort of said this before. I mean, actually, obviously, I haven't traveled a lot this year, but there was a point in my career when for work, we would fly a lot. And I went the other way because some people said the more you fly, the more you get used to it and the less anxious you become. And weirdly, I remember in my 20s, when I first started going on long haul flights, I used to love it. I used to embrace it. I used to just live for it. And then the more I did it, the more anxious I became to the point where I actually became borderline a bit without fail now. Every time I hate takeoff. With a passion every time. And so my weird rationale is just giving over whatever it is, 3 minutes of my time to watching that in the karmic way the world sometimes works.
It's going to save you.
Yes, yeah. You know, because that might just mean this plane won't crash if I just sit here and watch it obediently. It's totally irrational, I know.
And do you ever find, because sometimes I often am the only one around who's paying attention, and so, and the flight attendant always looks at me really gratefully. and then because you are looking at them, they direct everything to you, and then it just becomes this really weird, awkward thing.
Carrie, you know, they're literally playing to the audience of one.
Yeah. Yeah, which I've done many times.
It is weird because, I mean, you know, the one time I did struggle a little bit was when they tried to make it a bit too fun and a bit too jolly. Do you know when they tried to, cause I remember, I think it was BA a while ago, they got loads of famous actors involved and it just all got a little bit awkward and hammy. And weirdly, I found that harder to watch because it was just a bit embarrassing. It
wasn't. Well, there was a Virgin guy, and he was an ex of somebody I knew. So I sort of knew him and I got him on the plane a couple of times and he had a whole pattern where he was going things like, if the oxygen masks come down, fit your own first and then pick your favorite child. And put theirs on the neck. And it was like, it was just a bit like, oh, that's dark. I mean, I know because you are talking about something that in theory might happen, you know? So it's like, oh, dear. Yeah.
But so you generally, like in life, quite, as you said, a goody two shoes then, Carrie. Because I do think weirdly, without going on about the pandemic too much, because we do talk about it quite a lot, I know. But I do feel like sometimes that I didn't realize how much of a sort of by the book kind of person I was until this whole thing happened, you know, because now I'm very much like a, why is that person standing so close to me? Like the other day, for the first time in a long time, I was on the tube and somebody came and sat in the seat next to me. And I genuinely had a massive intake of breath. I was like, and then this.
No, that's a dick move.
Yeah. Was it? It wasn't even a full tube carriage. It was just really bizarre.
No. Oh, unforgivable.
Yeah. And I just suddenly thought, oh my God, this is what you've become. You've become one of these people that's like, you know, but it is weird. I hadn't realized I was such a sort of, you know, a law-abiding citizen until this happened to us. But
that's self-preservation. Did you say anything to that person?
No, jokes. I'm far too British. So I basically just, I did the inhale. Then I just sort of looked at it. I gave him terrible side eye. I mean, and that was it. Obviously, I didn't, God forbid I should actually say something. Would you say
I would have definitely said something.
Would you?
No, I can't. I'm so British, like I won't say anything. I'll just do the and get up and move.
Well, I would have probably done that, but I think I would have been moved to say, you know, there's plenty of opportunity to social distance here. I would have said something like that.
I don't even sit opposite people, let alone
My favorite thing at the moment, or my least favorite thing I should say, is people having their masks on but having their noses out.
Oh my God.
Like, what's the point? There's no point. And I read this brilliant tweet the other day.
Your nose looks so honkingly huge. Yeah. Like much huger than it ever would have. Yeah.
I saw this tweet the other day of someone saying that they their husband will no longer shop with them in Tesco's because she sings, "Put your nose in your mask, you're a dickhead," to the tune of "Give me oil in my lamp, keep it burning." She's like, "Put your nose in your mask, you're a dickhead." And I thought that's brilliant. I'm gonna do that from now on.
I love that. Well, I saw a meme. I never know whether it's meme or mem. With somebody had drawn, you know, wearing your mask with your nose out is like wearing your underpants with your willy out, with a little willy popped over the knickers. It's true.
It is true.
Yeah. It's I don't know how we got onto this, but I'm glad we did.
Right. Yeah. It's topical. It is bizarre, but I mean, hopefully, you know, oh God, I think. I just don't get why. Somebody was saying to you the other day, a friend of mine was saying they remember when the seatbelt ban was brought in, you know, when people made it illegal to not wear your seatbelt. And it was the same people that were going, "No, I'm not going to let my civil liberties be compromised. I'm not going to be forced to wear my seatbelt.
I want to fly through a windscreen just like my dad did."
But it's the same kind of rationale. These people say, "I won't wear a mask." I just don't get the big deal. I really don't.
And also, it's not like it's a fashion statement. It's not like they're trying to make you wear Crocs. Like, it might save your life. It might save your life.
Oh my God.
Well, or someone else's.
I'm now imagining some fucked up parallel universe where everyone is forced to wear Crocs. I mean, that. Okay, that I couldn't get on board with. Even I had to draw the line somewhere in my goody two-shoes.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
Me neither.
I know all the croc wearers are going to be up in arms now, but yeah, I just can't.
All the croc wearers.
All the croc wearers.
Yeah, I think the Venn diagram between croc wearers and listeners of this podcast is probably very slim.
Yeah. Well, let's hope so.
There goes our croc sponsorship. Hey,
Jane. I have to believe that. I have to believe it. Yeah.
Oh, well, on that lovely croc of shit.
Yeah.
Carrie, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Good luck with your book, Into the Spotlight, out September 17th.
That's
correct, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then obviously, fingers crossed, yeah, because it's Cinderella you're back in.
Cinderella, yes.
In March next year. But are tickets available for that now?
Yes, yeah, they are.
Where should they go, Carrie? Come on, here's a chance to give that a plug.
I believe it's the longest URL in the world. It is Andrew Lloyd Webber's Cinderella.com.
Yeah, there's a lot of potential for spelling mistakes. A lot of L's in that. Check your L's, everybody.
Thanks again, Carrie. And thanks
thank you very much. Listening. Thank you.
We'll see you again soon. And bye, Jen.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.